What's going on with Jensen stuff? What's happening with Jensen things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with Jensen stuff? I'm continuing to rearrange myself on the sofa to see how I can best get... Oh, this is nice. That way I can look outside.
Oh, wunderbar. This is wunderbar.
Oh, it's so good. I'm having a cold brew with some coconut creamer.
I'm going to then drink a sip of this coffee that's now cold.
We're both having cold coffee. Though it's very cold here.
Mine is room temp.
Mine's cold.
It is.
This coffee is cold.
Summer is fast approaching Los Angeles. Jane just dropped off, deposited a large fan in my house for fear I'll be hot. Though I have to say, I'm absolutely freezing in the evenings. Shivering cold.
LA does that. Also, it's because LA is, the houses aren't insulated.
Right.
In the same way they are in places where actual snow happens. So LA does do a thing of like really freezing you out at night. Do you have a comforter?
I do, a duvet. The desert does, you know, do that. It has huge fluctuations.
The desert does that.
And this is now a science podcast. Does that. This is about geology.
I like that The Desert Does That is going to be the 28th song that'll be on our 5-CD music thing that we're going to drop.
Music thing. It's mostly just going to be covers of what's going on with dance and stuff.
I mean, there will be that, but I also think there's some real... I mean, think of how incredibly we did Wind Beneath My Wings and how we did... Andrew Lloyd Webber's
PAASU.
Whatever.
PAASU. Oh, happy belated Earth Day, by the way. Happy belated Earth Day. Did you like my With Dance and Stuff Photoshop project?
We look incredible. I wish you would have dyed my hair black. I wish you would have done like what I used to dye my hair black.
I'll send you a version like that.
With charcoal,
mm-hmm. with tar.
When it really bothered you, when I would wake up and rub, like reach into the charcoal by my bed, rub it all over my head, put a little under my eyes, and then go out.
Uh-huh. All and your pillowcases looked day. Like Trisha Brown paintings. Just beautiful, like this is a painting made by kinetic movement in sleeps.
It's true. Speaking of charcoal around the eyes, and since this is dance and stuff, and I'm sure you'll have things to say about NYCB and their Tuesday evening competition with us. How dare they? But I went and looked through all of... I know it's one of those things where it's like, how did you not have time? And literally, it has been one of those things where I haven't felt I've had time actually to consume dance online, partly because... Not partly, because I'm watching student work every day online.
Uh-huh.
But I went through last night what the Martha Graham channel and what they've been putting up for these Martha matinees that they're doing on Wednesdays and Saturdays.
Oh, I did not
and
know this.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't Appalachian Spring because that's the one we've seen over and over again. And I wish it wasn't Lamentation because it's
did
just...
You? Watch Jack Murphy's Instagram story about having watched Appalachian Spring.
No.
Oh, maybe he can send it to you because he'll have it in his archives. It was so funny. He was like, you guys, it's not a good one. He's like, I love Martha Graham. She's my favorite, but this is not her thing. He's like, this is not what she's meant to do. This is not the piece.
You know... I love that Jack Murphy is our child. He definitely takes takes after you more in terms of looks.
Yes.
But
I think you and he have a similar sensibility.
We do. And I fully concur. It's Appalachian Spring is this, I mean, this thing for Martha when she's aiming at these love dances, these romance dances with Eric, which are so filled with her incredible rage. And I mean, she's still very turbid. It's so clear, all of these feelings that she has around him. The music, I mean, the Copland score gets so dark, and it's really, it does seem more like a frontiers couple dealing with psychological torment that they don't want the other people to see on stage. There's other far better examples of Martha and Eric dancing together. I would say American Document is one of those. But anyhow, and I wish that, so what I'm wishing for, and hey, Oliver, we have to have Oliver Tobin on, and people at Martha Graham, I would love for people to see some of the dances I've been able to see that are rare and not published on YouTube. And I understand that would have to go through the board, but like Herodiad, which is incredible. I'll post it. It's this Noguchi set, and she takes this piece of fabric and turns around and turns it into a dress in one quick movement.
Mm-hmm. Fashion.
It is, I'm absolutely going to post it with how I get dressed in the morning. And it's an interest. Wow. And even the story behind that dance is interesting, because is this boring you?
No, I mean, I'm sure it's not boring for the listeners.
I mean, it might be.
Well, you know, some people are into it and some people are not. And I'm feeling happy to just listen to you talk about Martha. You love her.
I do love her. I love her a lot. And
I love her a lot.
I love her a lot. So it was a score. Originally, the score's Hindemith. And am I saying that right?
Yeah.
And they had originally talked about it being this prowling lion. And so he made the score for her. And then he saw it, and it was, it's about a woman with an attendant, and she's getting ready to go somewhere. And he was like, this isn't what we talked about when we talked about this score. And she's like, well, this is the dance. And I love that footnote on collaboration.
Yeah. Martha's like, I'm sorry, I didn't call or write or,
but it's a piece,
Pony Express.
It's a piece that falls really great in between a piece like Deaths and Entrances and Night Journey, and it's lesser known, and I actually think I really love that work. And the thing that I do love about the Martha Graham channel is them showing, or that they're seemingly going to be showing, more of the archival footage that most people haven't been privy to see. I mean, when I was going to, as we will get to second half of Linda Murray today, when I would go to NYPL to look at Martha Graham footage, there was so much that was on lockdown.
Right.
And it's so exciting to see her do the work. It's when it's really clear that she made that work so she could dance, and watching her do it is the channeling of it, her and the early company. It really does have a sense of channeling of this spirituality that I feel does separate it from Balanchine. There's a sense of possession in Graham's work, the sense of these group dynamics of that does feel very witchy. And
well, I think she was more in touch with the archaic. She was very in touch with the ancient. You know, she wasn't,
yes,
she wasn't exploring like sophisticated kind of organizations of bodies and musical thing. Well, I mean, a little bit, but
a little bit. And I think that's when it becomes more problematic, actually, is in the later years, when it starts to steer more towards ideas of ballet or group dances. I mean, for me, I feel the Furies in Clytemnestra are not as incredible as the chorus in Night Journey. There's something that it's, and part of it is a way in which also you see her then starting to use a vocabulary she's created and then setting it a la ballet steps. like, in, you know, where you feel you're entering into, or it doesn't feel as explored, and it is starting to feel a little more, ballet. Mm-hmm. Contemporary ballet, as it, I think, started to get called.
Contemporary ballet. Well, Merce was sort of the opposite. I feel his early work was kind of, had a bit more of a ballet
mm-hmm.
lean to it, because I think some of his dancers were coming from that. Carolyn Brown was really coming from her training at Juilliard with Anthony Tudor, who really loved her, and it was all very, like, soft and classical. And as time went on and he got more and more abstract because of, like, his computer games and everything, he's like...
computer games. Well, he was playing Minecraft.
And then he was like, bodies can do whatever this stick figure can do. And then it all became, like, right. totally absurd and impossible. I did think about Graham today while we were doing lower back curves in Dylan's Cunningham class today, because I thought about how... seeing Peju do Cunningham in that show really gave me a whole new understanding of lower back curves. I was like, oh, like when I saw the like flesh from the front of her stomach, like touch her spine, I was like, oh, she like moved all her organs out of the way, you know?
Contraction.
Yeah. It was really clear.
Also, with that ability of contraction, you're going to have more stability. So if you are able to pull back that hard, it's going to give you stability. I mean, it's really sort of base of, you know, these ideas of core work, etc. But
there really is
a lot of Merce that of course comes from Mom Martha.
Martha Graham.
I did tune in today to watch some of the Cunningham class. It's beautiful.
I wasn't having a lot of fun today, but Dylan gives a lot of good words of encouragement. But I just, you know, it's just one of those days. It's just one of those days.
But you're doing it every day. You're doing your Cunningham class every day.
It is the only constant that I have. I listened in on this lecture for grad school yesterday that Lauren Baxt was giving about her own practice. And at the end, she gave some writing prompts. And one of them was like, it was all talking about like social entanglement and what that means right now in terms of what our social entanglements are in this time. And then it was talking about, she was talking about movement in the time right now. I can't remember the wording. It was a very good question, but I basically wrote like, for me right now, movement is from couch to toilet, from toilet to floor to bed, from bed to stove. And I was like, it's like creating this endless spirograph around this tiny space. And then I was like, the only constant in the day is when I stand on my feet for 1 hour and do Cunningham.
There's something interesting outside of that, of talking about that idea of this internal space and moving around the house, of then what also then happens when you go outside. I mean, I loved getting to FaceTime with you and Ryan Walker Page as you took a masked walk on Venice Beach. And I think...
the masked singers.
I think also, while you take a Venice Beach of Trash Vaudeville, as that vintage store on 8th Street used to be, mm-hmm. also the walk on Venice Beach. And then what is that somatic journey for you like? Does it feel shocking? Does it feel scary? Is there a way that your body wakes up inside of that?
Yeah, because I was doing even more walking when I was in New York, but I'm going to start doing more walking now in LA, and I have my new jump rope, so I'll start jump roping. But yet going out with Ryan, that was the first time I saw like another human being since I got to LA. And so that was like, whoa, look at that, peoples. But anyways, right. My whole, you know, everything's starting to feel very normal in a weird way. And I've taken now to finding very strange YouTube content soothing. Like last night I discovered that there's these Japanese people who do these chain paintings where they dump paint on a canvas in a very orderly fashion. And then they drag, you know, those little ball chains through it that you'd like pull a lamp cord, you know, that kind of chain. And then they like drag it through the paint and it makes like feathers or leaves or whatever they want. So I've been doing that. I've also been watching Japanese people clean vintage designer shoes, like a Chanel flat. And they show the whole process of scrubbing it clean and then like repainting parts of it. And that's been really soothing as well.
Interesting. I haven't been watching anything like that. I did watch. Did you watch Lady Macbeth?
Not yet.
A movie everyone told me to watch. And I'll just give my review, which is that I don't think it's a very great movie. But I think that
Florence Pugh
is incredible in it. And it just would have been...
Is Michael Fassbender Macbeth?
No, it has nothing to do with Macbeth.
Oh. Did he do a version of Macbeth?
Yes, he did with that French actress.
That
who
French
broke up
actress.
The... Who broke up the relationship of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie.
Oh, Marianne Cotillard.
Yes.
That movie where they're in the war or whatever and spying and I don't know what. They have sex in a car during a sandstorm and it was very good.
Uh-huh. Did you like that movie?
I thought it was okay.
Where they were spies. And isn't it that then she might be a double spy and he has to kill her?
Yeah.
And he does.
Well, so it's all very sad. It's all very tragic. I don't remember the plot. I do remember being sad.
Okay. I probably won't watch it. I did watch Lady Macbeth. I think the thing that my takeaway from the movie was, and it came out at that time of a lot of like mushroom poison movies like Phantom Thread and The Beguiled. And it's a fine kind of period piece, but and maybe the point was that everyone is really basic and we should just focus on this interesting, terrifying woman. But it just would have been interesting to me if all of the other characters could have been as interesting as she was, because then it would have created stakes. But instead you just kind of root for her to do a lot of bad things.
Well,
it's a very, you know, what if Madame Bovary really stepped into her power kind of movie. Did you ever read Madame Bovary?
I think
in, were you in psychological literature?
Yeah.
We had to read Madame Bovary then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked that book. I thought it was funny.
I don't remember it. I do remember reading it and then like Miss Slaughter was sort of like, bring in a response to this book in whatever form
you
want.
Yes, honey. What was your response?
I brought in a video of Sylvie Guillaume doing this Béjart ballet called Sissi about this Austrian Austrian rich woman, or maybe
which
she was
crazy,
who loses her mind.
Yeah. Right.
It has literally nothing to do with anything. But I was.
Did you get an A?
I'm sure I did. Yeah, of course.
I remember waking up and being like, oh, that things do. And I wrote a poem and I drew a little bit around the poem with some colored pencils and I got an A.
Of course. Creativity, darling.
Creativity, honey.
Last night I tried to watch Infinity War, which is one of the Marvel movies that is a gap in my knowledge. And they do too many jokes in those movies. I mean, the stakes are like truly the world will end, you guys. And they're making jokes constantly. It's strange.
Wait, what is... I think also somehow Jeremy and I ended up somehow seeing all the Marvel movies in this past month. What is Infinity War?
It's the one where Thanos, the big purple guy, gets introduced and he's trying to get all of the stones to fit into that glove. And it will go on to another movie where there'll be more of that. But and there's the Paul Bettany who's red and he has one in his head and they're trying to get out of his head. And
but doesn't Thanos get it?
He gets them all.
Yeah. I saw that movie. Honey, I thought you saw that.
I only saw the very end of it because I knew I was going to go be seeing the follow up. So I just saw the end. I was like, I can't watch this. But then last night I felt compelled. And then about a third or half of the way through, the Netflix went kaput, and I stopped. I went to bed. I watched a chain painting. I watched chain painting.
Infinity War isn't really, I don't know. I thought you were briefly, my mind skipped to the X-Men movies, Because I had a gap in the X-Men movies, which is the one pre-Dark Phoenix where she steps into her power to blow up also a Thanos-like character who is this true or false Egyptian god that was buried forever ago.
Yes, played by Oscar Isaac. I remember.
Oscar Isaac is playing that?
Yes. Yeah,
it's so much CGI. It's like, can he just do the voice?
These movies are all literal cartoons. Last night on a movie channel.
God, Oscar Isaac must be so rich.
Because Star Wars and X-Men, can you imagine?
Yeah.
But can you imagine? There was a Hobbit, the last of the Hobbit movies was on. And I was like,
oh, yeah, Jeremy had that on.
I'm like, this is a video game. Like, you can actually see where, like, the practical floor of the set ends, which they only bother to build about, like, 10 square feet of whatever it is. And the rest is just a video game. It's all a video game.
You know I auditioned for those, right?
I'm really sorry, Jack, because your whole life would be different.
It would be... I can tell you that my choir would be absolutely different if I had been...
Yeah.
I auditioned for the two lesser queens... and my first audition was I went into a green room, completely green, and there were different X's on it. And I had to do these different scenes. And the one that I was like, I'm not going to get this, was I had to do the thing where a spider's coming to eat the character. And I had to hold something. I had to hold, like, you know, a flashlight and pretend it was a torch and scream at the spider that, And I was like, look, honey, I'm a performance artist, but this one's a rough one for me. I don't think I'm going
to
get it.
You looked too related to Elijah Wood, and you couldn't be his brother, you know?
No, only room for one blue-eyed fag in that film.
I have a question.
And
come there hasn't been a movie where Naomi Watts and Nicole Kidman are sisters?
Can't, truly.
Why?
I mean, and they're friends.
They're in this movie from long ago called Flirting that Peter Jackson directed about, you know, Australian high schoolers. And Tandy Newton is in it. It's a great movie.
Yes, yes. And Nicole's hair looks it just looks like she stuck her finger in an electric socket.
She's, you know, 18.
Yeah. Well, it's before she was like, I'm going to really relax this, right. And it's a different thing. Yeah.
She doesn't ever show her real hair in movies since she became famous. It's all wigs.
Right. I love that. So that is her real hair, though.
I'm sure.
And Naomi Watts is in it. You know, Naomi Watts also is in this incredible, like, Children of the Corn 5. And I think that was what really kind of, that was one of her first American features.
I was shocked to learn.
Highly recommend.
Shocked to learn she's only been nominated for 2 Oscars. I thought, nominated for everything.
She is really good, but honey, she's unfortunately hasn't been in particularly great vehicles.
I wonder if that's because she got married to Liv Schreiber and had kids with him. She was just like, I'm a housewife now.
I love that you called Liv. Like, that's just... Liv, Liev Schreiber, it's really like Liev Tyler and Liv Schreiber. Liv Tyler looks so good in that Lord of the Rings, what have you, which I've never been able to watch those movies. I find them utterly tedious, but they are the precursor to Game of Thrones. They look exactly the same.
Yeah.
And Jeremy might be right that they're the beginning of those kinds of films. But I want to bring attention to Peter Jackson's best film, which is called Beautiful Creatures.
Oh, my. Maybe Peter Jackson didn't direct Flirting, and I'm confusing it with Beautiful Creatures. Beautiful Creatures.
Iconic.
So iconic. What happened to that other actress? You know what I mean?
She is in this Cinderella remake with Drew Barrymore as one of the wicked stepsisters who has a change of heart and actually helps her. And outside of that, I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Well, it certainly.
But it is incredible that I can even pull that up.
Huge fame.
Oh my God. When she looks at her and she goes, all the best people have diseases. I mean, it's really. Beautiful Creatures, if you haven't watched it in a long time, I highly recommend. It was intensely formative for me in the
Did you watch, speaking of powerful female friendships that could lead to murder, My Brilliant Friend this week?
I haven't seen the newest episode because Jeremy was not in the mood. I was like, can we watch My Brilliant Friend? And he's like, I just can't.
It's always devastating no matter what. But I mean, There's only one flaw with that show, which is wigs.
Wigs.
It's the only flaw. Just Leela's wigs. I'm like, you guys, it has to look like, it's just has to look like hair. It can't look like that.
My problem for her, my problem for the show is the blue screen when, or the green screen when they're in a car. I don't believe that it's a choice they've made. Like,
oh, really? It feels intentional.
It's so weird. It's so in a different genre to me that...
Oh, Jack?
Yeah.
My phone might die in a second. So let's take a little pause, or should we just go to the episode?
Well, I think we should wrap it up. We've talked. I'll watch my boyfriend friend. We'll get to talk about it. Ladies and gentlemen, please tune in to YouTube this coming Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is now where we're going to be, because we're going to start having guests mm-hmm. and interfacing a little more. We're dialing it up. Tune into YouTube there, and we'll catch up about this newest episode of My Brilliant Friend. In the meantime, if you're looking to watch some dance, just go to my website and look at that.
Also watch the Paris Opera Ballet Midsummer Night's Dream. It was lovely.
Oh, yeah.
Christian Lacroix versions of the Kerenska costumes yeah. and all the dancers are lovely.
I did see that.
I had a nice experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice experience. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we loves you, and maybe we will see you in the chat bubble next to us talking at on YouTube Tuesdays 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Enjoy the rest of Linda Murray, the icon.
The true icon who truly got me through last week, and I'm looking forward to listening to the second half to get me through this coming week. All right. We loves
you.
We
loves you.
Bye.
Do you have a sense of how many people were applying for this job? Because there can't be a lot of people who are qualified for this job who are alive.
Well, I think there's lots of them, trust me. I think what the library looks for changes all the time. And the thing about the library is it's a large institution, and the dance division is only one part of it. And so to get a job as the head of a division in any part of the library, you also then have to meet, you know, heads of other departments who have completely different agendas and things that they need to get done. So there's the very particular things that were important to the staff of the dance division that they were looking for in their new curator. And then there were sort of broader things that different parts of the library were looking for. And I in no way met all of those criteria, but somehow I was able to thread enough of the needle that I got through.
Most of the thread got through the hole. But, you know. Wow.
Yeah.
And so then you've only been in New York for 4 years.
Yeah, I started on my first day as curator was November 15th, 2015. Yeah.
And who called to tell you you got the job?
It was somebody in HR. Yeah, and the thing with the library that is always true is from the minute they tell you that you have the job, you're working. Like it was like another, yeah, because they had to do a background check on me, and the library had hired some firm to do all the background checks.
Private investigators who you quickly were like darting around corners in like black trench coats and switching into a different coat when you walk into a restaurant.
Wait, so you just got a call from HR of someone being like, is this Linda Murray? It looks like you got a job, which is, wait, let me find it, head of the dance division.
Hang on, I'm pulling up your file. Can you, what's your birth date again? Phone number I can reach you back at? Okay. Oh, it looks like you're going to be the head of the dance division. All right. Well, you begin tomorrow at 8 a.m. and
have a good day.
Have a click.
That was it. Yeah, that was pretty much it. But But then because of the 5-hour difference, they were finding it really hard, which fits into your spy theory. They were finding it really hard to confirm that I was who I was and that I had, you know, I had the, yeah. So they kept
Everyone thinks you're a spy, Linda.
They kept sending me these emails and leaving me these phone calls saying, we can't reach your university in Dublin, or we can't reach your university in Cork. And I would be like, well, what time did you call them? And they would be like, 1 p.m. And I'm like, yeah, that's 6 o'clock in Ireland. They've all gone home. Like, Irish people are out the door of their offices at 5 p.m. Like,
right.
So yeah, it took
you
6 weeks.
And you're like, well, I can give you the numbers of the pubs and you can try and call them and they can do a call out to see if they're available.
Linda, they really made an effort for you, because they could have just crossed you off the list because, you know, too challenging. Too challenging.
Well, I have to say, Jackie Davis, who was the executive director at the time, when she decides she wants something, she gets it. And she had decided she wanted me as dance curator. So yeah, she put her heeled foot down and was like, kill
Can you imagine, like, Linda comes into these interviews, they're interviewing other people, and Linda's there, and you're like, it's her. It's her. Figure it out. Like, if I was working there, like, if Linda applied for anything, I'd be like, it's her. There's not a question.
She wins.
Like, she's actually going to get things done. Wow.
She's the one where they can, like, have a bronze statue of her that will eventually be out the front door, you know?
Oh, my God. She's the absolutely one. It literally is. If there is a statue at the Performing Arts Library...
Yeah, and, right next to the Calder statue, it'll be Linda.
It will be Linda Murray, the patron saint. It's true.
No. Reed
and I will make it happen. Reed and I are industrious, and
it'll be Linda sitting on top of the Henry Moore in the water feature, just sort of looking at the library.
I like that idea.
I love
that's better.
Sitting in a fourth position in one of her iconic dresses. and it'll be called Linda's World. So you move, and then where do you, did you, is the apartment you're in the apartment you got as soon as you got here?
Yeah.
Where is that?
That's in Long Island City. And again, it was like at the time, he's since gone, but I had a 75-pound dog called Elvis. And he was really old and arthritic, and he couldn't take stairs anymore. And so I was in this, I had one day to find an apartment in New York. I foolishly...
HR hangs up the phone, see you tomorrow at 8, better have an apartment, bye. Yeah.
That is essentially what they did to me. I had to come up on the day of the New York Marathon, so I couldn't even get around the city. So I'm going around New York City looking at these apartments, and the minute I mention my dog and his weight, they're just like, mm-mm. And so I'm looking at walk-ups, and I'm looking at apartments where 35 pounds is the limit, and the last apartment I saw was in Long Island City, and it was the first apartment that had an elevator. And when I said his weight, they were like, yeah, that's fine. So I was like, okay, just give me the lease. And I had no idea whether it was in a good neighborhood or not. But I'm really glad. I like it a lot. It's, for me, the big transition with New York that I never experienced, even though I've lived in lots of other big cities, like Paris and things like that, is I've never known a city where the noise doesn't stop. And I, as somebody who grew up in a country, even though I grew up in Dublin, which is a city, Dublin is surrounded by sea and mountains and countryside. So it's very easy to be alone and be in nature in any part of Ireland. And, you know, I spent large sections of my childhood just sitting in trees, reading books and things like that. So the thing about New York that I found, I didn't quite process it for the first few months, and then I was wondering why I was always on edge, is like, oh, I'm never alone and there's always noise. Why is there always noise? So what I like about Long Island City is you come out of the subway, and even though it's still New York and it's still noisy, the energy hum of Manhattan is the other side of the river, and you can sort of feel a little disconnection from
how close are you to the Pulaski Bridge?
I'm pretty close, actually, yeah.
Because the chocolate factory, or what, I mean, it's
near
in transition.
Neighborhood.
Well, that is a mere, like, 20, 25-minute walk to my apartment. So when this is all done, you will be coming over. I will be coming over. And then in terms of my upstate residence, it's very quiet up here. So that's also another thing. You can come up here and read.
Linda, if you were to come up and go swimming in the pool, what would you wear? Is the question.
I'd have to wear the Reed and Harriet swimsuit. That's on sale for $75 right now, right? The Bella.
And she knows. My God. My God. We just talked about this last two nights ago or whenever Reed and I
she
talked.
She can head up
Instagram
a whole
live.
Dance division, and she has time to know Instagram. It's amazing.
It's incredible. And to
Linda,
know
do you do the Jerome Robbins it. Dance Division Instagram? Are you the Instagram doer?
It kind of varies. At the library goes through fits of allowing us to have our individual Instagram accounts. At the moment, they're sort of pushing for more centralized ones. But yeah, I definitely keep an eye on the Jerome Robbins Dance Division Instagram.
when I started to be mentioned on the Jerome Robbins Dance Division Instagram account, I felt
famous.
Thrilled, I will say, famous. I really did. I really felt really excited, and it was also this thing of I was very touched when Reed, because it was Reed who first said, oh, you should get in touch with Linda Murray and you should get your works to her and da da da. I was like, they're not going to want these works.
Of course
and,
we are.
And it really shifted not only, and then working with you for a year shifted my perception so greatly of what was available and not only available, but what was being sought, and it felt very much what you and the librarians there are trying to do of making sure that the archive continues to grow, that it doesn't stay like a mosquito in amber.
Yeah.
And that is a huge testament to you and the librarians there. The way of being able to talk through modalities, theory, politics, in the form of dance, it is incredible. And I really, the admiration I have for you and the librarians there is huge.
Well,
it's
they
so
do,
huge.
They do all the work. I mean, you know this, like the work is always done by the staff. I just get to swan around and take a lot of credit for the things that they do.
I don't know, Linda. I saw you after you had to like get off of a flight from Milwaukee. Like you had done like a day trip to like go and get an archive in Milwaukee, come back, unpack it. And I was like, how are you? You're like, I'm all right. And I was like, well, you look like you've been working hard. And you're like, well, I did have to get on a flight and go to Milwaukee and pick up this stuff and then get on a flight and come back and we're unpacking it and da da da. You work hard. All of the librarians there work really hard and in conditions that, as Jeremy brought up in the Jeremy certainly in like the film For Nowhere Apparent that he did that have so much bureaucracy inside of them as well. Is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
The conditions are not that you have to work in are not seamless and a kind of one-to-one ease.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that is true.
And I think is something really...
Oh, I was just going to say, having done these fellowships that Jack and I have now done at the library, it's like really illuminated how incredibly challenging the job you do is and all the librarians. And the fact that they all seem to love and respect you must mean that, you know, you're doing something.
They're very forgiving people. And they're all...
Librarians are very patient.
They are.
The librarians are patient, but at the same time, I will also say the librarians have the tea. And when it comes to like people in the dance world, all people in the dance world, the librarians know them and they have their number. They have their own score of the reality.
Yeah.
Of it as well, which is also really exciting because there's also this sense of truth prevailing and both historically, personally and artistically. And that feels so special to the division. And also it's and in working this past year, The experiences that I've had with you, the experience I had with you and Cassie, mm-hmm. of just Cassie's losing so my special. Mind, going through this, listening to these men who are dead, who I wish I could speak to, and sobbing on the up there, and you both being so not only supportive but emotionally available, helping in every which way to direct. It's just, it's an incredible division. And I'm curious now in the chaos that we're in of another political oversight disease nightmare.
Yeah.
What's going on with the division right now during COVID?
So we're working virtually. So the staff are all working full time, and we're trying to keep as many of our services going remotely. So there's still virtual reference available. We're bringing out a new form starting next week so that people can book special hours with the librarian, and we'll call you on Google Hangout or whatever device you want. So we can chat to you and see you. We actually launched the fellowship again yesterday. So the theme this year is dance and immigration. So that's open for applications, and we've figured out a way to run it virtually if we have to. So we're still...
Ladies, gentlemen, another, I cannot encourage you enough to apply for a fellowship. It was... the archive I was working with was emotionally painful. It was so exhausting from day one, and I was really ready for it to be over as soon as I began. But for Reed, I think
it's not an easy fellowship. No. And it does involve a kind of like work that you don't initially understand how challenging it is to excavate mm-hmm. the library. And that's why you end up with like this huge respect for the librarians and the institution, because you realize that these protecting these and archiving these materials is a monumental job. And also, I don't know, I didn't anticipate I guess I was also nervous about having to give a lecture, which is something I'm unaccustomed to. But it was a lot of work, but it was very rewarding.
I can't recommend people do it enough. Like I think working in an archival setting is different from regular academia.
Yeah.
And it's unless you're, because it's a focused period of a thesis.
Yeah.
So that for me is I'm not in that kind of zone in my teaching career mm-hmm. like that at this point. There'll be things where I'll want maybe go and research them if I'm proposing a new course. But so I do really encourage people to apply. So this is on dance and immigration.
And go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, I think the information that I took away from that project at the library will end up being the bulk of what I end up doing and teaching in the future. I think it really will be the basis upon which everything else happens for me as an instructor moving forward. And I wouldn't have known that without my time at the library.
And I, as someone who is teaches about AIDS and the National Endowment of the Arts breaking apart during it, and that time spending, I didn't understand fully the impact that it specifically had with dance, specifically mm-hmm. around the body and specifically around homophobia in that setting.
Yeah.
And how much later dance was to come into action.
Yeah.
Because of people who were running who were not only running these companies, but also running them while watching their funding dry up.
Yeah.
And watching the funding dry up in a climate that was becoming more and more conservative again.
Right.
And just feeling filled with terror.
And we're gonna have it happen again with COVID, because this is going to impact dance in a way that it's not going to impact the rest of the arts, because our art form is about proximity and intimacy and touching and physical connection. So even the when you get down to the essence of the creation of the art, it's the same things that ran through the AIDS crisis in terms of fear and uncertainty and isolation.
And I said this to Reed earlier, you know, during the AIDS crisis, there were the ACT UP and had that, the poster of Ronald Reagan where it mm-hmm. said, "He kills me." And I've seen, and people have remade that poster now with Trump of yeah. it, of the same thing happening, of that, of also who is, and then who's being taken care of medically. I mean, again, we're also coming into a thing around class warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly in terms of COVID, what's happening racially.
Yeah.
So it is going to be another big canyon.
Well, and trauma lives in the body anyway. So in excavating the aftermath of this, dance will palpably articulate it in a way that other art forms cannot. So it's
true.
Yeah, it's very hard to watch our community go through this right now.
What has it been like for you as someone who I feel people, I certainly have turned to you as a North Star, and I'm sure other people are turning to you asking for advice, support, or et cetera. How has it been for you?
It's wonderful when people reach out, because I think the thing we worry about most in the division is not knowing how everybody's doing. So we want to hear from people, because as much as we're about being a library and an archive, and obviously that is what we are, we're also a community space or a convening center. So, and still finding ways for us to convene, allowing the community to connect to us is still very important to me. So we're delighted when people reach out to us, and I encourage people to reach out to us. And, you know, the librarians and I have spoken a lot about how reference can also just be a point of human connection and just a moment of checking in. And that's as important a service to provide right now as answering somebody's specific dance query. And then the other thing I'm trying to do a lot of is, you know, you experienced this very deeply with the AIDS Legacy Project, Jack, that there was such an absence of information there, that there was so much that was missing. And yes, the division took steps and tried to do those oral histories, but it was an avalanche of information and personal stories and histories that was just falling off the face of the earth. And we weren't able to scoop it all up. And I'm really concerned that we're going to lose this moment in history as well. So trying to talk to Arjas about any documentation they're doing in this time, however frivolous it may seem, to make sure that they're holding on to that information and backing it up in some way, because I will come along and I will take it and I will put it into the archive and I will make sure that it's there hundreds of years from now, because this will be a moment that we have to unpack for multiple generations. So just trying to, it's hard. It's hard when you're isolated and your whole world is falling apart to then start thinking through, you know, I better make sure that I save that file that I made today. But those are the actions that are going to be the difference in the story getting told. So just trying to make sure that people know how to do that. If they don't know how to do that and they want to do that, that they contact us and we'll talk them through the process.
Well, and off of that, Linda, I feel like that's actually the very thing that could inspire someone to want to keep going at all. I mean, as Reed and I recorded earlier before talking with you, so much of what we discussed was this sort of, it's hard to not feel that malaise and that, mm-hmm. especially when you feel, and this was so true with AIDS, those who were able to resist and also those who felt so exhausted and overwhelmed by a power, mm-hmm. which was this supposed federal government doing something so inhumane. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes beyond it goes into such a surreality,
mm-hmm.
That it becomes a thing of how how to go forward. And something that I think is so, something that I have found sustaining as a teacher is knowing that what I'm giving them is for them to go beyond me. That's the whole point, is that I'm going to help them mm-hmm. because they will hopefully last longer than me. Yeah. And that it has to be passed forward. And I feel that your job in the library that I have so much respect for is this archive that can live, can grow, and be there mm-hmm. for in the future. Mm.
And
well, that's...
No, go ahead, yeah. Linda, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Reed.
Well, I was just thinking, especially in watching Jack and Jeremy go through with the oral history project and the oral history fellowships, wait, this year, was it all oral histories or was it just, what was the broader topic?
So the broader topic this past cycle was actually the dance division itself.
Oh, that's right, celebrating.
Yeah. So each of the former curators had picked a collection that they felt was particularly important in the story of dance. So Madeline Nichols, who was the curator when the AIDS crisis broke out, she watched the community being ravaged in real time. Mm-hmm. For her, those oral histories were everything.
And in watching Jack and Jeremy deal with something called an oral history, which I didn't really understand until they started coming home in tears and I started to get like a bigger
welcome to the library
sense of what this was about. I think it gave Jack and I like a kind of different sense of purpose in this podcast, because it is silly and we do have fun, but now after a few years of doing it and amassing all of these sound bites with people of importance for now in dance, mm-hmm. it's starting, you know, there are days where you're like, why does it have to happen every week? Why do we have to do mm-hmm. it again during this pandemic? And I think the work that we did with you makes it easier to go on and to continue just making something every week so that there's a sense of continuity once it's all over.
Mm-hmm. It's really lovely to hear.
Well, Linda, you inspire us. I mean, even, and I feel like keep going back on it because it literally is going to be in this episode, which starts with me and Reed being like, why are we doing this? To be totally transparent, it's devastating. Yeah. It's depressing.
Yeah.
It's sad. And it's horrifying. And I'm filled with rage at this completely inept, evil, twisted government. And so that feels like I'm still living in some sort of fiefdom where the kings and queens are like, la la loo, I have my cake and I'm okay. You know, and while other people are like, I need to work, you know, and then you have these terrifying people like being like, no, I don't care if I get sick, I've got to work. And an artist being like, am I just going to die? So it's, I think that, and those waves hit, and they hit in a really huge way. And so to even just to hear you in this be like, you know, no matter what the sound bites are, I'm collecting them all because they will be the things that we have in the future for it. Mm-hmm. And that was really true as I went through the AIDS oral history things. I mean, there were things that we didn't use for time's sake, but that really gave me a sense of what it is to live.
Yeah.
It's been hard. I mean, in this, it's been awful even thinking of the kind of, I can already read the backs of the books of some really stupid books that are going to be written about this time. Like, you can kind of already feel it happening, like mm-hmm. how people coped and how people didn't cope. And that doesn't tell me how people continue to live no matter what, you know? And I think that is a place where history can be a great salve. Martha's life was something that has continually helped me.
Yeah.
Because she is an incredible person to look at of what success means or doesn't mean. Mm-hmm. She didn't have security.
Yeah.
All she wanted to do was dance, and then her board stops her from doing that. She battles alcoholism. It's like, you know, but yet she makes a change for people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's iconic. I mean,
she's
everything.
She is iconic. Like you, Linda.
No. Oh, yeah. Me and Martha Graham side by side.
I prefer to go your way, quite frankly. I would prefer that. But I think there will be something interesting in terms of what you're collecting. Have choreographers and dancers reached out of like, I'm making this sort of material that is online, or I want to have a virtual viewing of my work in some sort of conversation?
Yeah, we're definitely having those conversations. And then I think I've also just been having conversations with choreographers who aren't even thinking through the archival part of it yet, but they're just reaching out for advice on how they can be creative online, how they can play online and make work online. And then I swoop in with my, and make sure you archive it too, after we have the conversation about what might be possible. I quote this all the time. So there'll be, you know, anybody who's ever read anything I've written about dance archiving will know that I quote this. There's an archival theorist called Terry Cook who famously said, "We are what we keep." And that's always my mantra when I look at the archive, when I look at the collection, and when I'm considering what has to come in next. The idea is that, you know, the story of humanity gets told by the things that we place value on and choose to leave behind for the next generation. So we can either give over history to those who are in power and allow them to place their version of events into our cultural institutions, or we can take that power for ourselves and we can put alternate narratives in there. And I feel that if a dance division doesn't provide that alternative, you know, rendering of our history, then who will? Is our community is, we are the physicalization, the epitome of telling, we're truth tellers. And yeah, I just feel very strongly that this is a moment where the community needs to tell its story, tell it vociferously, tell it boldly, and then my job is to make a place for that story to live.
Oh, Linda.
I know, Linda.
Well,
we really,
I have things
we
I'll be so, sending you.
We were sick of ourselves and not wanting to do this 2 hours ago, and now it all seems like more bearable somehow.
Well, because it's going to be a let's do it for Linda. I swear to God, if there's something to help me get up in the morning, it's going to be, I'm going to do this for Linda.
Yeah, we're going to do it for you, Linda.
Well, I mean, teaching is one thing. Teaching makes sense. My efficacy is clear there. I have something to give because I'm old and I can help these kids with some knowledge around some things that they don't have yet. And then... not content-wise, I'm really into them creating that, but formally, and just seeing some more. But in terms of this process and this long-form art project that Reed and I have to say, speaking with you today has been very, very inspiring and helpful. Yeah, for sure.
Thank you.
I just love you so much. I really do. I have nothing but utmost respect for you.
Well, and you know how much the two of you mean to me. In I've had unique relationships with both of you. I know you together, but I also know you apart. And you're both incredibly special people with very beautiful gifts.
The best conversations I've ever had on dance have not been on this podcast per se, because there's things that can't be said on this podcast just because... But it's been on in phone calls with the two of you.
Aww.
There are ways that you are both able, and again, it's this thing of that you can speak through the canon, all the way up to what's happening right now in ways that are so exciting to me, and always thought provoking and inspiring.
I appreciate it too. Wait, Linda, I have one more question for you.
What?
how many dresses do you think you have?
Oh God, I don't know. I'm not even the fashionable one in my family. My two sisters are the clothes horses. Like my father calls them the Imelda Marcuses of Ireland because they have so many pairs of shoes. I don't know is the honest answer. Okay.
I think that's in keeping with your spy persona. We'll never know. Uh-huh. We'll never know how many dresses.
We'll never know. I mean, we Reed and I have definitely been like, I've never seen her in the same thing twice.
No.
And this past year, Linda, I saw you a lot. I did. Almost every time I was at the library, I saw you, and I was there a lot.
And we are going to really come to your house and film in your closet for the Dance and Stuff show.
I have my, I told you guys this, I have my Everything is Imaginable dress, which is
amazing.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, I wasted my 20s not dressing the way I wanted to. I think in your 20s, you're too much in your head. And then I made a transition where I was just like, eh, I'm just going to wear whatever I want. So I love...
It's incredible. It's a fantasy. It's a fantasy.
And it's always perfect. Yeah. When Reed and I were at the reception for the 75th anniversary, when we were standing in the lobby, you know, and you got up to speak, Reed and I at the same time in tandem without looking at each other just screamed iconic. like witches sharing the same brain. We both screamed iconic as you stepped up on that podium. I was just like, oh my God. And it is something. Another way that it's inspired me is the only big grant I've ever gotten was the FCA. And at that time I was like, okay, I'll buy a uniform because my mind is too busy. I'll buy all black and I'm going to spend like $500 to do it. Mm-hmm. And this past year I've been like, I have got to get better clothes. Every time I would see you, I'd be like, I wear black bags or like a midriff. And I need to really step it up.
Well, I
you inspire me in all ways, Linda. Content and form.
You can borrow my clothes anytime.
That I when you have said that to me before, and it happened right now, I break into a slight sweat because I'm like,
any day now, Jack is going to start appearing exclusively in like shin length sheath dresses, and that's it.
It seems imperfect. I just have to find the right shoes to wear. Yeah. It's a real like calling Melissa, getting some like black. I'll have to have Melissa make me my own black molded shoe from their plastics. Linda, we love you so much. Ladies, gentlemen, and other, please go to, is the fellowship open on NYPL right now?
Yeah, it is. And if anybody needs any help right now, if you just want to chat to a librarian because you're feeling lonely today, or if you have a dance question that you need to have answered, if you just write to dance@nypl.org, I promise we'll get back to you.
Oh my God.
That is incredible.
Oh my God.
Jack, do you know how to take a screenshot on your phone?
I am. I'm going to take one now. It's so good. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, other, we love you so much. as Reed loves to say, ladies and gentlemen, we love you so much or not. But those of you who we love, you know who you are. And those of you who we don't, we don't care about you anymore.
And join us on Tuesday evenings on Instagram Live.
Yes, it's true. You guys are amazing Tuesday, on Instagram.
Well, we Tuesday were pretty dreary this past Tuesday, I have to say. But we're going to try to pick it up.
People really loved it, Reed. I think there's something that there's, you know, the grid of like different kind of people that you might be. And lately, I think we're functioning in lawless chaos.
I did get a couple texts from people saying they liked when I said that my phone notified me that I'm now down to 8 hours and 15 minutes of screen time average.
And the other thing that came up on that, speaking of archives, was I began by talking about journal burning because I burned all of my journals,
Linda,
from the time I was a child.
Can you believe
till 28.
Well, if you look at Lincoln Kirstein's diaries in the library, you'll see that he wrote on the inside of all of them, burn this. But then he gave them to us. I'm like, why would you give them to us and have burn this on the inside? So clearly we did not burn them.
Because I started learning Graham as a teenager and I had heard, you know, the famous story that she had burned as a lot of her journals. When Matthew Rogers and I broke up, I was like, I'm just going to get rid of everything.
Yeah.
Just start all over. And it felt good, but I'll have one. I have one that I'm more than happy to give you.
Okay.
If I was going to give my journals to anyone, I would give them to Linda.
Linda, do you have any parting words for our audience?
No, just watch you guys on Instagram. Like, I feel like you're the mood stone of the dance community right now. Like, I feel like the shifting colors, you know, those 90s rings we all used to wear. Yeah.
I love that. Mood stone.
We are cloudy, cloudy darkness right now.
Reed and I are the hypercolor moonstones, giving you fear as the kids of the 90s, string cheese, silly putty, giving you a Lunchable moment even. Perhaps it's a Lunchable while listening to Annie Lennox.
Annie Lennox, I'm with you, but I did not get to enjoy all of the wonderful American snack foods.
Mm-hmm.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. was...
It's probably for the best, Linda. It ended up
That's why you
sick.
Look how you look.
Stunning. Full stunning. All right. Well, Linda, we love you so much. Listeners, we love you. Rate, subscribe, review, watch us on YouTube. There's an In the Closet that's up for your amusement. And you know that Linda Murray will be, as soon as we're out of Quar, I will be stomping across the Pulaski Bridge with Jeremy.
And I have my present for closet. You, which is and in I'm, my I'm, closet.
That you got me something to wear. I can't even begin. It's made my choir.
Well, and happy birthday, Merce, everybody.
Oh yeah, happy birthday, Merce.
Oh, and Linda, when is your birthday? What month and day?
I'm December 10th. I'm a Sagittarian.
Sagittarius.
You're like Reed, a Sag, someone who can do everything.
Yeah, she's 1 week.
Sagittarius, is there Sagittarius is someone who can do everything, or as Norma Desmond says in Sunset Boulevard, Sagittarius. I like Sagittarius. You can trust them.
Except when they're spies.
I'll trust you always, Linda. I trust you with my life. Okay. All right. Well, we love you. I look forward to speaking with you
soon.
Love you too.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye. Love you.